Welcome to the Torati Macha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Hanalei Rappaport, and today we will be doing a summary of Sefer Shmuel Beis. The first four prokim is really a conclusion to Shaul HaMelech's reign, with information about his family and the way that David deals with what remains of the kingdom. Perek Aleph acts as a companion to the last perek in Shmuel Aleph. We know that Shaul's army has been defeated by the Plishtim, and Shaul and his sons were killed. A runner came to David from Shaul's camp and told David of Klal Yisrael's defeat at the hands of the Plishtim, including the deaths of Shaul and Yonasan. This person who came says that he came across Shaul, who was wounded, and Shaul asked him to kill him, which he did. He took the crown and bracelet, which he presented to David as a proof. We don't know whether he actually did kill Shaul or saw Shaul dead and took the crown and bracelet and came up with the story in order to find favor in David's eyes, thinking that David would be thrilled that he had killed Shaul. However, David, who had never agreed to kill Shaul despite his persecution by Shaul, was furious and had this man, a self-professed Amaleki convert, killed. He then sang a eulogy in memory of Shaul and Yonasan, which, of course, is read every year on Yom HaZikaron, which is coming up. Eich naflu giborim, how did the mighty fall? Perek Beis, chapter 2. Now it seems that David should take over the leadership. He asked Hashem what to do and was told to go to Hebron. There, the tribe, the Shevet of Yehuda, anointed him and crowned him king over them. David heard how the people of Yavesh Gilad, with tremendous bravery, managed to go into the land of Plishtim and recapture Shaul's remains and give them a proper burial. David blesses them and promises to take care of them. We should be going into peaceful times, but Shaul's general, Avner, who believed that there were meant to be two kings before David, not just Shaul, took Shaul's surviving son, Ishbosheth, and made him king in Shaul's place. Ishbosheth rules for 2 years, managing to control most of the Jewish nation with Avner's help. It's unclear exactly when this happens, but sometime during the 7 years that David is king over the tribe of Yehuda in Hebron, two of those years Ishbosheth is king over the rest of the Jewish nation. There was conflict between the two groups of Jews, Yehuda and Yisrael, and perhaps, in order to deflect a greater civil war, Avner comes up with an idea that turns into tragedy. He suggests that 12 of his boys fight with 12 of David's men, who were under the control of Yoav, David's general. It was meant to be sport, but it spun out of control, and a full-fledged battle broke out with fatalities. Yoav's brother, Asael, tries to chase Avner. Avner tells him to stop, but when he doesn't listen, and without a choice, Avner kills Asael. Then Avner calls off the war, his side losing 360 men to David's 19. Paragimel, chapter 3. While the fight between David and Ishbosheth continues, Ishbosheth does something which makes no sense, accusing Avner, his general, and the one who's responsible for keeping his kingdom, of sleeping with Ritzba, Shaul's concubine. Avner was furious and told David that he wanted to switch to his side. David requested that Avner bring him his wife back, Michal, who was Shaul's daughter, as Shaul had taken her away and given her to another man. Avner does so, and then starts to bring the entire Jewish nation to David HaMelech's side. However, Yoav, whose brother had just been killed by Avner, thinks that this is a terrible mistake and kills Avner. David is very angry and curses Yoav, and he mourns Avner very publicly. It's obvious to everyone that this was not David's doing. Perek Dalet, chapter 4. Ishbosheth is killed by two people, Paana and Rechev, and they severed his head and brought it to David, thinking perhaps he would reward them. David, again, was angry and had them killed and buried the head of Ishbosheth in Avner's tomb. We also find out in this perek that Yohanan had a son named Nephibosheth, who had been dropped by his nurse as a small child and, as a result, could not walk. With these four first chapters, we end the reign of Shaul, and we move on to establishing David HaMelech's reign and his primary task of building the Beis HaMikdash. In Perek Hay, chapter 5, representatives of all the Shvatim, all the tribes, came to David and swore allegiance to him. David was 30 years old at this time. He captures Yerushalayim from the Yevusi, and Hiram, the king of Tsur, sent material to build a palace for David. We also learn a little bit about David HaMelech's family at this time. The Plishtim, who are not happy about this new development, come to fight, and David conquers them twice, once in a direct confrontation and the other time miraculously. Now in Perek Vav, chapter 6, David goes about getting the Aron back from the house of Avinadav, where it had been since being returned by the Plishtim back in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, which I'm not going to go into, but the Aron is in the house of Avinadav. However, something goes wrong. David had it put in a wagon instead of it being carried on their shoulders. The Aron started to slip, so Uzzah, one of the people who was bringing it, reached out and grabbed it, and he died. David gets scared, and they left the Aron in the house of a man named Oved Edom, where it stayed for 3 months. But Oved Edom had a tremendous amount of blessings coming to him. And when David sees this, he says he's going to try again. When he tried for the second time, he did it much more carefully, with a lot more thoughtfulness, offering karbonos every 6 steps. David dances with much joy, and his wife Michal thought it was undignified. They argued about this, and Michal was punished for speaking harshly to her husband, to David HaMelech. In Perek Zayin, chapter 7, David asks Nosson Hanavi if he could start to build the Beis HaMikdash. Nosson says yes, but that night Hashem told him to tell David that David would not build the Beis HaMikdash for many reasons, which we discussed, but his son, yet to be born, would. Not only that, but Hashem made a promise that this dynasty coming from David and this unborn son would last forever, even if there were sinners along the way. Even if they sinned, Hashem would never abandon the house of David. David sings a prayer of thanksgiving to Hashem for this promise. In Perek Ches, chapter 8, we see David galvanized into action. If he wasn't going to build it, the Beis HaMikdash, he was going to lay the foundation for it by making sure that there was peace from the enemies and plenty of funding. He fights many battles and consecrates the spoils for the Beis HaMikdash. The Perek ends with a listing of David's cabinet and ministers. Perek Tes, chapter 9, is a bit of a pause. David finds out what happened to Shaul's descendants as he wants to fulfill his promise to Yehonasan to take care of his children. Mephibosheth, Yehonasan's lame son, David finds him and had him brought to him, and David invited him to eat regularly at the king's table just as a member of his own family. He also gave him land and told Mephibosheth's servant, Tziva, to continue to work the land and to provide for the rest of Mephibosheth's family. And that ends chapter 9. And now we are turning to the next major portion of the Sefer, which is going to have implications for everything that's going to come next. In Perek Yud, chapter 10, the king of Ammon, Nachash, who had protected David HaMelech's family and saved his brother's life in Shmuel Aleph, dies. And after Nachash dies, David sends his messengers to be Menachem Avel to comfort the son. However, the new king, Hanun, suspected that these men that David sent were spies, so he cuts their beards in half, and so too all their clothing, cuts it straight down in half. The men are mortified, and David tells them to wait until their beards grow back. Understanding that David would come to fight, Ammon decides to take the first step, and they start up hiring mercenaries from Aram. Yoav vanquishes Aram, who then promised not to fight the Jews again. While Yoav was fighting Ammon, we come to one of the most difficult stories in Tanakh, in Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, the story of David and Bathsheba. If it was difficult for me to teach this in 20 minutes, it's impossible to summarize it properly. So I urge you to listen to at least that recording in full, which gives us a little bit of a better picture of what was going on. The way it's written in Pshat is that David saw Bathsheba bathing, found out she was the wife of Uriah Hachiti, who was out fighting, one of David's soldiers. As a soldier in David's army, he had given her a get, a conditional divorce, before he left. Chazal tell us, our rabbis tell us, that anybody who fought in David's army before they left gave their wife a conditional divorce. David had her brought to the palace, slept with her, sent her home, and then, when she let him know that she was pregnant, he called Uriah home and instructed Uriah to go to his own house, presumably to cover up his, David's, actions. Uriah publicly refused and now becomes a Morid B'Malchus, a rebel who deserves death. David sends him back to the front lines with a letter to Yoav commanding him to put Uriah in a place of danger so that he would be killed, which is what happens. Then David brings Bathsheba into his own house and marries her. The Gemara says that David did not sin. It's clear that things happened here in a way that they should not have, and David is going to spend the rest of his life doing tshuva, repenting for this. But as we explained, Then, when I did this in full, the mistakes were not adultery and not murder. It was something else. Again, I refer you back to the full lecture for more clarity. The next many prakim are a reaction to the story. In Perikud Beis, chapter 12, Nasan Hanavi comes with a story to David about a wealthy person stealing the sheep of an impoverished man. David gets very angry and says that the wealthy person will have to die for this crime and repay the poor man four times over. Nasan reveals to David, you are the wealthy man in the story because you took somebody else's wife, and because you took Bathsheba in the wrong way, you will need to pay four times. David immediately accepts responsibility and confesses his sin. Chatasi, I sinned. Nasan says, because you confessed, you will not die, but what you did privately will be done to you publicly, and you will have four tragedies befall you, as you yourself said, that you will have to repay four times. The first of the four times happens when the child that Bathsheba is pregnant with, is born and becomes sick. After 7 days, when David was inconsolable, davening for this child, the child dies. His servants are scared to tell him, but he reacts by accepting the judgment. Ultimately, another son, Shlomo, will be born to them, to David and Bathsheba, whose name will also be Yedidya, a friend of Hashem, will always have a special relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Meanwhile, Yoav has completed the war against Ammon and calls David to retrieve a special crown. In Perikud Gimel, chapter 13, one of David's sons, Avshalom, had a sister, Tamar. Another son of David, Amnon, lusted for Tamar. Unclear what the relationship was between Amnon and Tamar. Perhaps they were half-siblings, perhaps they were step-siblings. Amnon's friend figured out a way to get Tamar into Amnon's room, where he raped her. After the rape, he was disgusted by her and threw her out of his room. Avshalom was furious. He waited and sometimes later made a sheep shearing party where he killed Amnon. The message came to David that all his sons were killed, but then he found out it was only Amnon. Avshalom, who knew that his father would be very angry at him, ran away to his maternal grandfather in Geshur. Avshalom's mother was a convert found in battle, a beautiful woman found in battle, and so her parents were the king and queen of Geshur, and that's where Avshalom ran. And David mourned both for his dead son Amnon and for his estranged son Avshalom. This is punishment 2 and 3, the rape of Tamar and the death of Amnon. In Perek Yudalah, chapter 14, Yoav sees how much David misses Avshalom, so he comes up with a plan on how to get him back involving a wise woman from Tekoa. David does allow him to come back, but refuses to see him until Avshalom burns down Yoav's farm to get Yoav's attention. Yoav convinces David to reconcile with Avshalom, who at this point was a Nazir with luxurious long hair. Nazir is a person who takes on himself some forms of abstinence, not drinking wine, not cutting his hair. And this is something that he did when he was in Geshur, and he holds of himself very highly, both on a religious level and on a personal level. In Perek Tesvav, chapter 15, Avshalom begins to ingratiate himself to the people, eventually crowning himself as king with the help of Achitophel, a person who was extremely intelligent and had always given David good advice, yet unfortunately his intelligence did not make him a good person. David takes the passive route, knowing that this was all part of his punishment. He leaves Yerushalayim, leaving his concubines behind. He sends the Aaron back, together with the Kohanim, Tzadok, and Eviasar. He says, if I merit to come back to Yerushalayim, I will. The Aaron belongs there. He also sends his friend Hushai back. Hushai had come to help David, and David said, you go to Yerushalayim, telling him to embed himself in Avshalom's team and to try and pick up any helpful information. Perek Tesayin, chapter 16, Tziva, the servant of Mephibosheth, comes to David with donkeys laden with food and drink. Tziva made up a story that Mephibosheth didn't come and is celebrating the fact that David has run away, thinking that perhaps now the kingdom would return to Shaul's family. David doesn't know if it's true, but he confiscated Mephibosheth's property. He said, when and if I'll be king again, I will give Mephibosheth's property to you, Tziva. David comes to a place called Bahurim, where a relative of Shaul, Shimi ben Gera, comes out cursing him, throwing stones. Avishai offered to kill him, but David said, no, my own son is rebelling. What can we expect from a family member of Binyamin? Hushai has ingratiated himself with Avshalom, as the plan had gone. Avshalom asked Achitophel what to do now to establish my melucha, to establish my monarchy, and Achitophel told him to sleep with the 10 concubines of David, who had remained behind in the palace, this way to show that he was the king. He did this publicly, as had been predicted. Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. Achitophel tells Avshalom to now gather an army and defeat David, but Hushai says, wait, gather everyone together, get a much bigger army, and wait until you have lots and lots of people. Avshalom listens to Hushai. Hushai sends a message through the sons of Avyasar, who were almost caught, to David about both plans so that David could prepare. Meanwhile, Achitophel realizes that he was in trouble either way, predicting the downfall of Avshalom and realizing that he would be punished for his part in it, he hanged himself. Avshalom now crosses the Yarden with Amasa his general, and Barzillai brings food for David HaMelech. In Perek Yudches, chapter 18, David does not go to battle himself, as his people told him not to because they realized that he was the main target. He stays behind to daven, but tells his people, commands his people, don't kill Avshalom. Avshalom gets stuck by his hair in a tree while his animal runs ahead, leaving him hanging between heaven and earth. Yoav, who hears that he is there, instructs his people to kill him, says to his people, kill Avshalom, but they refuse, citing David's instruction. Yoav then hits him himself, and his people finish the job. Now David will be told what happened. In Perek Yutes, chapter 19, David grieves over Avshalom, until Yoav comes and tells him to stop. It's not nice to the people who are loyal to you. Your mourning is excessive. David forgives Amasa and makes him his new general, and also forgives Shimei ben Gera. Mephibosheth comes and says that I've always been loyal to you, David. I just couldn't come because I was lame. David doesn't know who to believe, and he splits the land, which is going to have implications in Sefer Melachim. He also rewards Barzillai HaGiladi for his kindness at David's time of need. An argument breaks out between the people of Yehuda and the people of Yisrael, because the people of Yehuda bring David home and the people of Yisrael feel like they are monopolizing David. In Parakhov, chapter 20, taking advantage of this situation, Sheva ben Bichri, a man from the tribe of Binyamin, starts a new revolt. David tells Amasa, his new general, to gather people, but when he comes back late, Yoav instead goes out to fight. When Amasa reappears, Yoav kills him as well, and then chases Sheva ben Bichri, who has barricaded himself in a city called Avel, Beis Ma'acha. A wise woman there negotiated a deal with Yoav. Yoav demanded Sheva ben Bichri, and she convinced the city people to have him killed in order to save the rest of the city. The parak ends with another listing of David's cabinet, signifying a return to the main storyline which we had left in Perek Ches in chapter 8. Perek Chof Aleph, chapter 21. It's unclear exactly when this story happens, and again, the story is a complicated one to explain, but there's a three-year famine, and David asks Hashem, why is there this famine? What needs to be done? The answer that was given was that there wasn't enough mourning done for Shaul, and that the Givonim, a group of converts still back from the time of Yehoshua, were wronged by Shaul when he had killed out the city of Nob and needed to be placated. They demanded the death of 7 of Shaul's descendants, which David was instructed to do. They were left hanging, and one of the mothers, Ritzpah, came to sit with them to protect their bodies from the birds and the animals. David buried the remains of Shaul and Yehonasan, and the parak ends with many more wars that were fought. Parak Chaf Beis, chapter 22, is a song of praise, which is replicated in Tehillim as well, thanking Hashem for saving him from all his enemies. We get a taste of the David HaMelech who we are very familiar with, from Sefer Tehillim. In Perek Chof Gimel, chapter 23, we get David HaMelech's final words, as well as a listing of the strong men of David's army and some stories that happened with them. And lastly, in Perek Chof Dalet, chapter 24, yet another difficult chapter where David mistakenly counts the Jews, leading to a punishment. Unusually, David was given the choice. He was allowed to choose the punishment. It would be either more famine, 3 months of battle, or a plague. He chose the 3 days of plague, which ended after a much shorter period of time. Yet, in that short period of time, 70,000 people died. During the plague, David saw the angel of death with his sword outstretched over the granary of Arauna HaYebusi, where the angel of death was stopped. He asked God Hanavi, what's the significance of this place? And God told him to purchase it and make a mizbeach there. This granary is the Makom HaMikdash, the place where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. The Perek and Sefer end with David literally buying the place of the Beis HaMikdash and Hashem accepting the tefillos of the land. The Sefer begins with the aftermath of Shaul's death, David's desire to build the Beis HaMikdash, a description of the story of Bathsheba and the results, his deep personal struggles with the child who died, Amnon, Tamar, and then the revolt of Avshalom, followed by the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, before bringing us back to the pursuit of his grand vision, laying the ground for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Throughout the preparation and delivery of the shiurim, of the lectures on the Sefer, I heard the echoes of Sefer Tehillim, of David HaMelech's songs, David's gift to us all. David had been through every conceivable challenge and comes through stronger, more connected, more devoted. Achas sha'alti me'es Hashem, he says in Tehillim, I only have one request. Throughout his entire life, with all the ups and downs, all the difficulties that we know he experienced, he continues to say, I have one request, I have one desire, there's one thing that I want. Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yimei chayai. I just want to sit in your house, Hashem. I want to build your house. I want to be part of your house. I want to be yours. He remains the same person throughout. He leaves us with a legacy of hope, acceptance, and gratitude, which we continue to live with today. Thank you for studying together Le'ilui Nishmot Imohotenu HaYikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Alah HaShalom, and Sarah Shankar Alah HaShalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.